Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Happy Wednesday morning to you. Once again, broadcasting from the State House in Montgomery. What is the State House for now? Every time I'm up here on Wednesday, I walk by where they are digging up dirt, and I assume about to lay a foundation of some sorts to build the new State House. Brought to you by the RSA. But we are in Montgomery, and disclaimer, it's always a little tricky here with the building's internet, which can be frustrating. But we will make the most of the situation. Coming up today, here in just a moment, warming up at the bullpen, State Representative Troy Stubbs from Wetumpka. Also, we got a bunch of members I've never had on today, kind of checking a bunch of boxes here. A new-ish member, State Representative Ben Robbins from Sylacauga area. I also got Ron Bolton coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. We got Speaker of the House will join us at 10:30. Nathaniel Ledbetter. Been a little bit since we've had him on, but he has requested time, so we have obliged. State Representative Cynthia Allman from Tuscaloosa also on the docket. And then when the House members go to what they call their caucus lunch, we will have State Senator Sam Gavan, who is reportedly going to carry the Massachusetts Ethics Bill. And you know the dust-up we had on the airwaves last week about that. So that is coming up on the program, as always, 251-343-0106. Need to be in touch with the show, text me. That's the best way to get in touch. And given the opportunity, I will respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. But joining us now, as I mentioned, State Representative Troy Stubbs, Elmore County, former Elmore County Commissioner. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Great.
Hey, thanks for coming by. Well, you and I don't—I haven't got to really know each other, but I do. I'm aware. Like, you got a—you're freshman lawmaker, the old Mike Holmes seat. But how's it going for you so far?
It's going great. I'm enjoying being in the state legislature and the opportunities to learn and grow and serve on various.
Well, and as far as that goes, you know, just kind of getting in, was it what you expected it to be? Did you come into this? You never know what to expect, I guess. But there's a talk to Will Barfoot, you know, from your area, and he expected it to be like something where you work everything out on the floor, and you know, everything's just. But it's all sort of, yeah, there's an open process, but there's also the sausage is made kind of just talking amongst each other sometimes.
Absolutely. I think I'm grateful for my experience as chairman of the Elmore County Commission for 6 years prior to being here, because we did have at times local legislation or matters that were pertinent to the county commission. So I became familiar with the process in the state legislature, but there's certainly nothing like being up here and seeing that happen. You know, in committees, I think we are able to talk about a lot of things and communicate about things. But you're right. I mean, at the end of the day, we really have to work hard behind the scenes to get things to a point where we can make progress for the people of the state.
Well, and so you and I were talking off air just a moment ago. You sit on the Education Budget Committee, and that's kind of a hot place to be right now. Well, what should we expect? How's that been going?
Well, I'm grateful for Chairman Garrett and the opportunity to serve on that committee. I do have a background in education. I was a public school teacher for 4 years. I'm a certified math teacher in the state of Alabama, so I have firsthand experience in being in a classroom and having, you know, 100+ kids on your roll and teaching math and interacting with students and teachers and faculty. So I you know, that experience I rely on a lot. But, you know, we are in budget season right now. We just passed the House budgets out of committee, and I anticipate those coming in the next week or so, and then we'll move it to the Senate and see what they have to say about it.
And lately, it hasn't been quite the contentious process that maybe it had been in the past. But like talk to us about that. I mean, anticipate any problems or you know, like I know it's a heavy lift, but it's one of these things that it's not controversial per se.
Yeah, I don't anticipate any problems. I think the reason we are successful or have been over the last couple of years is leadership. You know, Chairman Orr in the Senate, Chairman Garrett in the House, and the governor's office have all worked closely together year round to make sure that we are putting our best foot forward when we present these budgets and meeting with lots of different people, different organizations to make sure that we're doing all we can to meet the needs. But, you know, one thing we are cognizant of is that the economy, will slow down. There will be less revenue in the future, and we've put in ways to handle that with some of the reserves that we're building up to ensure that we don't find ourselves in a predicament in the next few years.
Well, and lately, you know, the education budget is just dwarfs everything. I mean, it is where a lot of the money goes in the state. I mean, it's spread out a bunch of different places. So, but it's also been where we start talking about tax cuts, the grocery tax. We start talking. That's when the tax cutters start looking at taxes. That's where the money's going to take the hit. It's going to take a hit in the ETF, right? So talk about that. Like, you got the grocery tax last year. Has that been like, do you foresee a growth, if you will, to get to where that next step, that next phase, and, you know, just tax cuts in general? Are there other places where you could target a tax cut and maybe not impact the ETF in a way? Because it's still growing. I mean, it's still getting bigger every year.
Absolutely. I think that we continually need to monitor our tax code in the state and how we are impacting the people of Alabama. But it is a fine line, as you mentioned, you know, as you consider tax credits, tax cuts. You know, every time we do those things, which are viewed as very positive things, and I view those as very positive things, but we are taking money from that education budget. And so we have to be able to reconcile that and identify how are we going to backfill that, right? Or are there areas that we can make some adjustments? And I think some of those will come in the way that we fund schools. That's something that we're going to consider in the next couple of years in how we identify the needs of schools and provide them with the funding that they need. Right now, we just do it per pupil. We basically say, how many kids do you have? But we don't know how many of those kids are special ed, how many of those kids are English as a second language, how many of those kids are free and reduced lunch, which we know from data that special ed children require more funding. English as a second language requires more staff. And so we can be much more proactive in providing the schools with the funding that they need for the particular school students that they have. And so we're looking at that, and I think that will be a positive step in and maybe allow some of the things with reference to tax cuts and other things in the future.
Well, let's talk about just education in general, and then, you know, on the policy side, but so much of it we're told is we need more funding, more funding, more funding. I'm sure you had an earful about
absolutely
that. But like it does, there are things going on right now, the Literacy and Numeracy Acts apparently. But I mean, you came into this kind of fresh with a clean slate. Is it necessarily funding that? I mean, what do you think the problem is with education in Alabama?
Well, I'm sure there are some areas where it's funding. One thing that we have to be mindful of is our state from an education perspective and socioeconomic perspective is very diverse. And what works in Hoover may not work in Lowndes County.
Right.
And so we have to be cognizant of that and make sure that as we're making these decisions, we are not only focusing on certain areas, because obviously there are areas that are struggling academically. Performance is not up to par. I don't know that the answer to that is just money. There are a lot of other factors that contribute to students' performance school. And so we need to make sure, are we providing adequate support? Are we making sure that it is enticing for qualified teachers to live in those communities? Because, you know,
that's a tough sell. Sometimes, you know, Alabama's a rural state, and you know, and is the opportunity right for that particular teacher or administrator or whatever it may be. But some of it, representative, and you know, some of it just seems like the culture's changed. And how does the education system catch up to where the culture is now. But why is Alabama seems like it's feeling the brunt of it more than other states? You know, like I know you're on the ETF and not on the policy side, but like you said, just throwing money at the problem is what we're told will fix it. But I've been hearing that for years, and you guys have answered the call. You've given more money to the ETF, but it seems to kind of stagnant.
That's right. I think we made tremendous progress this year, and time will tell. But, you know, passing school choice and providing that opportunity for families to make those decisions in areas throughout the state is, I think, a step in the right direction. I view taxpayer dollars that we are responsible for. You know, I look at what is the return on investment, and if that return on investment in certain public school environments isn't very good, it's still taxpayer dollars, and we're still trying to produce law-abiding, contributing citizens to the state of Alabama. And if that comes through a private school, or if that comes through a home school, or if that comes through a public school, at the end of the day, what is the return on investment? And if we are producing and giving people more opportunities to make those family decisions and find success, and I believe that it will lead to competition, which will lead to, in some of those poorer areas where they really don't have choice, right? We hear that a lot. Well, my area, you pass school choice, but we don't have choice because there's nothing else
there's
there.
There's no, like, private school that right. say choice, right?
But we're bringing in capitalism and the free market. And so we may find that in some of those areas, those market, those private schools or opportunities for choice will pop up in those areas and give people that flexibility and opportunity to make those family decisions.
I mean, does the free market approach work inside of government, right? Like, and I mean, this is because that's just the assumption, and you kind of have to have a blind faith in it. And I've always been like, if people want school choice, we should have it. But as far as it just like fixing the woes of our education system, I've always been a little skeptical of that.
Well, I would agree with that, but I would say this, as we stated earlier, throwing money at it hasn't worked.
Right.
So at some point as leaders, we have to make decisions to identify what may work, what would lead to successful outcomes. What have we seen in other places? I traveled to Dallas for a school choice conference last year with the support of the budget chairman and the speaker to learn about other states. And it wasn't a conference with a bunch of lobbyists and activist groups. It was a conference of legislators from other states who had passed school choice in Iowa, West Virginia, Oklahoma, other places. And I was able to learn a lot from them. And so I think that it's got to be executed properly. I mean, it's not a sure thing, but I think it's the right direction to go in trying to identify how we can better serve the people of Alabama in education, because as you stated, we're not there yet.
Well, and this school choice bill you got out this year, are you happy with it? Do you think it does what as far as school choice goes? Because I, you know, historically with the Alabama legislature on these things that I think are good faith efforts, they're done incrementally, right? So this is very incremental in nature.
Yeah, I think as with anything, there were a lot of people at the table and there were a lot of discussions that took place to get to this point, to something that we could pass. And that did require a pause where it doesn't come into effect until 2025. It did require a gradual application of the funding for the first 2 years with an income requirement, and then moving on from there where it's open and it's true school choice for all. And that incremental approach was necessary to get us to a point where the bill could pass. But, you know, I think that my preference would have been to go all in immediately, but I also understand the process and understand where we want to be. And this does give us time to plan and prepare and get to a point where, you know, hopefully people will see that there's opportunity for that free market approach to come in, and maybe they can build themselves up to get to a point where we can be successful with the program.
Well, Representative, I know you got a hearing to get to, but we do appreciate you making time for us, and let's talk again soon.
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks a lot for having me.
State Representative Troy Stubbs there. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Ooh, Montgomery.
Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, Mile.